This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 148.
I did a lot of self-reflection, talking to mentors, talking to peers, like what could I have done differently to advance and create more impact within the organization? And I realized that a lot of it came down to mindset. So becoming the CEO of your own career is really about taking your career into your own hands, being more intentional and realizing that you have more control over the outcomes of things. And we can't control everything, but we can, to a certain extent, positively influence those goals that we're trying to reach by being more strategic and thoughtful about our careers.
How do you create, shape, and strengthen your career brand? Why is showing up in small moments the key to a strong presence? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. If you're really serious about becoming a more business-focused and strategic HR leader, then you need to make attending my Next Gen HR Accelerator program a part of your 2025 development plan. And if you're a CHRO who wants your HR team to have even more influence and business impact, then you're going to want to send your team to my Next Gen HR Accelerator program as well. Because my Next Gen HR Accelerator program is a best-in-class leadership development program specifically designed to equip high-potential HR talent with the skills, mindset, and tools they need to become strategic business leaders and value creators. Over 4 intensive weeks, you'll build your business acumen and financial acumen. You'll sharpen your strategic thinking, elevate your executive influence and communication skills, and learn how to translate business strategy to HR initiatives that deliver impact and value. You also get targeted feedback and coaching to help you grow as a leader. As every Next Gen HR Accelerator participant receives 360 feedback, personal coaching from me, and leaves with a targeted from to development plan. That is why one past participant said the Next Gen HR Accelerator program completely transformed their approach to HR. Over the past year, over 100 HR leaders have been through the program from companies like Verizon, McDonald's, Nike, Prudential, Pacific Life, Hershey, Kohler, and many more. Our next cohort starts September 9th and registration is now open. Space is limited and we expect to sell out. To learn more about the Next Gen HR Accelerator program, go to futureofhr.com or reach out to me directly to learn more. My guest this week is Lorraine Lee. Lorraine is an award-winning keynote speaker and best-selling author of Unforgettable Presence, Get Seen, and Gain Influence, and Catapult Your Career. She's passionate about helping professionals go from invisible to unforgettable in the modern workplace, and her frameworks have been adopted by Fortune 500 companies and other globally recognized organizations, including Zoom, Amazon, Cisco, and McKinsey & Company. Before starting her own company, Lorraine spent over a decade as a founding editor at top tech firms like LinkedIn and Prezi, where she worked on core products, including the LinkedIn Daily News module and LinkedIn newsletters. With over 320,000 followers on LinkedIn, she is recognized as a top voice in workplace communications and presence. And when Lorraine isn't speaking, she teaches popular courses at Stanford's Continuing Studies and on LinkedIn Learning. I enjoyed my conversation with Lorraine, and I know you will too, as we discussed how she transitioned from her corporate career in tech to becoming an award-winning keynote speaker, LinkedIn instructor, and author. Why adopting a CEO of your own career mindset is essential for professional growth. How HR leaders can build a strong, authentic presence on LinkedIn, even if you're just starting out. How you can use her epic career brand framework to achieve your career goals. And how the Think, Do, Feel matrix helps you prepare, understand, and connect with your audience, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Lorraine. Lorraine, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I am doing wonderfully. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Congratulations on the new book, Unforgettable Presence.
Thank you so much.
Super good book. I really enjoyed it. Excited to talk to you about the book today, but I want to start with your story and really hear more about how you went from the corporate world to now an award-winning keynote speaker, a LinkedIn instructor, a Stanford instructor, and now author of Unforgettable Presence.
I spent the first decade of my career in tech on editorial teams. So I have a journalism background. And so I was very fortunate to enter tech at a really pivotal time where I got to be a founding editor at LinkedIn. I was a founding editor at a company called Prezi, at the presentation platform. And I was someone who always thought, yeah, the corporate is going to be my life. I'm going to continue down this path. And lo and behold, end of 2022, got impacted by the tech layoffs. So I got laid off from Prezi. However, before the layoff happened, while I was at Prezi, I started public speaking, not to make it a career, but because I wanted to learn it as a skill, but it sort of became its own thing, which led to becoming a LinkedIn Learning instructor and getting on podcasts and being interviewed for articles and things like that. By the time the layoff happened, I was able to choose a path. I could have applied to more corporate jobs or tried to go off on my own. And so talked with my husband and we decided, let's give myself a year to take the solopreneur path and see what happens. That's when I continued to do the speaking, leaned into teaching more, creating more courses on LinkedIn Learning, created a course for Stanford continuing studies. Book was not on my radar at the time, but that's essentially how I got into doing what I'm doing today.
Well, that's amazing. So you really were just building your brand and your presence, taking some actions and putting some good things out in the world. And so when that happened, you had the opportunity.
Yeah. I feel very fortunate because, yeah, getting laid off is a scary thing, but I had a little bit of this cushion, or at least maybe I should say confidence that I could do other things if I wanted to.
So interesting now. And I know when you think about, a lot of people feel like, hey, it's more secure to have a job. Yet, we could be laid off at any time. Things can happen. A recession could happen and a company has to make tough choices and you could be a great high performer. They decide, hey, we're going to cut the team down in half and you're now looking for a job. Yet you're also on your own as a sole entrepreneur and that probably feels risky. But how do you think about those two things now that you've done both?
It's so funny you say that because when people would ask me, so they would see me posting on LinkedIn and putting my thoughts out there, being out there and speaking, and people would ask me and they would say, while I was in corporate, they would ask, oh, Lorraine, have you ever thought about being an entrepreneur and doing your own thing? And I said, no, it's not for me. Corporate's more stable. I like it here. And I know that limits me from doing a certain number of things with my side hustle, growing it only up to a certain point if I want to still have a life outside of work. But I'm okay with that because corporate, it just feels more secure. And then as you said, JP, like the layoff happens and you're like, huh, I guess it's not very secure. I think with a startup or as a solopreneur, it is this interesting balance because part of it feels more secure in the sense of you own everything, like you're making the decisions, you can go out and push harder, like if you're trying to look for another client, but there is less consistency, less stability, at least at the beginning, right? Hopefully you build something that allows to have more recurring revenue and things like that. So pros and cons always on both sides. I feel like the corporate people always think the solopreneur life looks like the best thing in the world. The solopreneurs are sometimes like, oh gosh, I wish I could just have that stability in corporate and just, you know, take my foot off the pedal a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, there's definitely trade-offs, right? I kind of think the way I've done both now, and I think about that there's actually no such thing as job security internally or externally. Like we have to always continue to be pushing and growing and really carving out our own path because things are changing so quickly. So even if you felt like 2 years ago, you were on top of your game and you really are an expert, now we have AI or something else is happening that is shifting. And so you have to continue to learn. But you actually like to think about this as being your CEO of your own career. And I think it's a great mindset. Talk a little bit more about what that looks like in practice.
I started thinking this way, becoming the CEO of my own career, really after I left LinkedIn. What happened when I was at LinkedIn is I worked really hard. I got to work on really high priority projects. I was well liked by my peers. I liked my coworkers as well. On paper, it would seem like that would be the recipe to advance and to reach that next level. And, you know, you learn the hard way that hard work isn't the only thing that goes into promotions and advancing. So what ended up happening is after I left LinkedIn, I did a lot of self-reflection, talking to mentors, talking to peers, like what could I have done differently to advance and create more impact within the organization? And I realized that a lot of it came down to mindset and understanding how to take better charge of things. I think I was more of a passive participant, assuming certain things. Oh, I've been here for 6 years. Of course, like it's going to happen after 2 years, 3 years, whatever. Oh, I work really hard. Yeah, of course, that good work is going to be rewarded. Or, oh, this is an important one. Oh, my manager should know that I want to be promoted. Like, do I have to be so explicit and repeat it multiple times? And I should have done all those things. And so becoming the CEO of your own career is really about taking your career into your own hands, being more intentional and realizing that you have more control over the outcomes of things. And we can't control everything, but we can, to a certain extent, positively influence those goals that we're trying to reach by being more strategic and thoughtful about our careers.
Yeah, it's great advice. Just thinking that the work is going to stand and speak for itself. Unfortunately, it's just how things work. And you've got to really promote yourself in the right way and promote your team and your accomplishments. And I think one thing people forget too, especially early in their career, is that promotions aren't really your manager's decision. It's a team decision. They forget that there might be other vice presidents, other directors, other people they've got to influence who need to think, yeah, you know what? Lorraine is ready because she's been doing some things for me, et cetera. And I don't know, because I'm a little bit older and closer to where I'm at in my career, I'm a Gen X, but the concept of doing the job before you get the job was something I heard a lot growing up. And it seems unfair. Well, why would I do the job but not be paid for the job? And it was really because it's risk management. Because someone's taking a chance on you and saying, look, I'm putting you in this role and it's a high risk if you don't perform. So I want to make sure you can do the job. And so that's the philosophy I've always taken now. But I think you have to learn that lesson the hard way. And I think, frankly, early in your career, a lot of us feel like, oh, I did a good job. Why wouldn't you know? Of course I want to be promoted. Maybe they don't think that because they're thinking about their deliverables and everything else. So I love that perspective. You also have something in the book that I thought was really interesting. You call it the EPIC Career Brand Framework. Can you walk us through what EPIC stands for and why this is useful?
The EPIC Career Brand Framework is a framework to help professionals better define their brand and understand what their brand is. Now, I'll take a step back before going into the framework in that we all have a brand. Now, sometimes we hear the word personal brand or the phrase personal brand and we think, ooh, like, I don't know, that doesn't sit well with me. Like, that sounds like I'm the person who's always bragging about myself or marketing myself. So in the book, I call it career brand. And I think that better describes what your brand is in service of. It's really to help you grow your career. And then taking another step back, what is a brand? A brand is essentially a reputation. When you think of it like that, you realize, oh, we all have a reputation, right? So we all already have a brand. Now it's up to you to decide, am I going to be intentional about shaping it, creating it, strengthening it, or am I going to be passive about it and let others define it for me? The EPIC Career Brand Framework is there to help us figure out what exactly do we want to be known for? What is our story? EPIC stands for experiences, personality, identity, and community. Experiences, these are the personal and professional life experiences that have made us who we are today. We have personality. So for example, I'm an introvert. I don't know, JP, are you introverted or extroverted?
I'm pretty extroverted.
Okay, extroverted. Okay, so that's part of your brand, right? We all have a set of things that make us uniquely us. Maybe we're more serious, we're more playful, we're the team culture champion, whatever it is. Identity, that can be your cultural background. So for example, I'm an Asian American woman. That's part of my identity. Also, it can be the values that you operate by at work. If a client comes to me or they ask around like, oh, what's it like working with Lorraine? They're going to say certain things that I want them to say. So, oh, she's wonderful to work with. She's a fast communicator and she always follows through on what she says she's going to do. So, for example, that's one that's important to me. And the fourth piece, community. This is where people forget to focus. So you come up with your fancy brand and you know what you want to be known for, but your community and your network needs to see you in the same way that you see yourself. Because if they're not seeing you that way, then that's not actually your brand. To make sure that you're checking in, that you are repeating your brand, that you're making it known in multiple places, right? Having that presence is going to help you strengthen that and also allow your brand to spread, reach more people. So if there's that disconnect, you have to figure out, okay, what is a disconnect and how can I bring those things closer together?
Yeah, it's a great framework and model just to be more intentional about how you're showing up and thinking about what you want to be known for, and what are you known for? And one tip I've had, and I forget who gave this to me, but really just going out and talking to five or so people you trust in the company and say, hey, I really want some feedback. And I really want to know what are the one or two words that I'm known for, or one of the two things I am known for around here. And just ask, what's your reputation? And get a gauge for it. Because they might just say, gosh, you're really good at doing Excel. Oh, interesting. You know, you'll find out some things you didn't think about, but that's how your brand is showing up. And you're like, well, I don't want to be known for Excel. I want to be known for being strategic and leading programs. You have work to do if you get those kind of answers. But you work a lot with people around their career brand as well. And so I wanted to ask you, when people get stuck, how do you help them and get unstuck?
I think where people get stuck with their brand, one is that mindset piece that I mentioned earlier. The second thing is not spreading it around enough. I think a lot of us will create a brand and we have a certain way or certain perception that we have. And then we kind of keep it in a box and it's like, okay, that's our brand. But especially in this day and age, we have hybrid teams, we have remote teams, we have just in person. And so there's so many different places that we can interact with people. There's so much going on, so much information being spread. To make sure that you are showing up in the right places, being seen by the right people at the right times. And that's a huge part of presence. We can make sure that we're showing up really well in that moment, but if it's not the right moment, it's not the right place by the right, it's being seen by the right people, then it's only going to get you so far. So making sure that you are, again, being strategic and being really intentional about your presence.
And how do you think about people who might feel like, I'm just not sure I fit here. I've been here for a while. I feel like I'm really being intentional about my how I'm showing up and my career, but I don't know if I fit for whatever reason. And how do you coach those individuals to think about that?
I would reflect on a few different factors. So there's a few ways that you can look at it if you're not feeling like you're fitting in, right? So one could be, is it the role where you don't feel like you fit? Is it the team and the people around you where maybe you don't feel like you're fitting in? Or perhaps is it the organization? So once you get a clearer sense of where perhaps the disconnect is, you can make moves that way. So if it's just the role, but you love the company, maybe it's time to switch. If it's the team, again, maybe, you have to talk to someone. If it, I don't know how toxic it is, you know, as an example, but if it's a bad situation, like figure out, is there another person, another manager who you can work alongside? If it's a company, probably time to move, right? So I think doing some self-reflection exercises can be really helpful. And then JP, you mentioned before feedback. I think getting the feedback, asking like really specific questions can go a long way in helping you assess the situation, figure out ways that maybe you need to improve or change, or to just like figure out what's going on in the situation and how things might get adjusted to better suit you.
Yeah, great, great feedback. To think about it differently too, because sometimes we think, oh, just I've got to leave the company, but maybe it's the team. Maybe you can shift roles a little bit. That could be really helpful. You also talk about in the book that communications and being a great communicator is a career accelerator. Which I totally agree with. You talk about, of course, you're a journalism major, so writing is really important to you, right? So I totally agree, though, that if you can write well, it's helpful. But you have a great framework in there called the Think, Do, Feel framework. I think it's something every leader should have in their toolkit. Just walk us through how that works in practice.
100% communication is such a differentiator. And it's funny you mentioned the journalism background, because I entered the workforce and I thought, oh yeah, like doesn't everyone know how to write? And then you see and you're like, oh no, not everyone does. If you can be that person to communicate well, communicate clearly, I do think that that helps you stand out. But to your point about the Think, Do, Feel matrix. So this is a matrix that my presentation coach, mentor, Spencer Waldron came up with. And what he did is he took this matrix, it's called the Think, Do matrix, and it was created by this professor, Andrew Abella. This is what you fill out anytime you're about to present or communicate something to a specific audience. It's basically think, do, now, after. So how does my audience currently think about the thing that I'm about to speak on? How do I want them to think differently after they hear me speak? What are they currently doing now? What do I want them to do differently after, again, they see my presentation? And then Spencer very astutely realized, okay, emotion is a big part of presentations too. So let's add in the feel category. So how do they currently feel? How do we want them to feel in the future? This simple exercise, it does not have to take hours, like spend 5 minutes filling it out. And you'll realize pretty quickly, oh, I don't actually understand my audience at all right now. And I need to get asked some questions to make sure I get them and understand what is important to them. And or, oh, I actually do understand my audience. Okay, now that I know all these different factors of how they're thinking, what they're doing, how they're feeling, I'm going to only include this specific content in my presentation, or I'm going to take it from this angle because this is going to be what resonates with them and what's going to help them get to that future state. Because when we present, we want something to happen. We want an action. We want to see a change. It's really like, let me present just to present.
Yeah, it's a great model. And I think even if you do that up front, hopefully, of course, before you actually do the presentation, you'll have a better presentation. But it's a really good gut check at the end to say, how do you feel about the presentation now? Will people think and do and feel differently, like, and what I wanted to? So I like that. It's a great model. Because HR leaders, a lot, we have to present, we have to get ready, we have to influence executives. And we sometimes, you know, we may or may not, depending on who we are, think and put ourselves really in that shoes of that leader, or really think about what do we want them to do differently. And if the message gets lost, we have less impact. Now, you've had a lot of impact. You've had a lot of success. You have over 300,000 followers on LinkedIn, which is pretty impressive, right? Those are not small numbers on LinkedIn. But if an HR leader is looking to build their network and brand on LinkedIn, what advice do you have for them and where should they start?
Well, if an HR leader is looking to do that, definitely go to LinkedIn. It's a smart move to be there. LinkedIn is really our virtual water cooler, our virtual landing page, and what I like to call our ultimate virtual office. So you want to be seen at the office. Being active on LinkedIn, I think, is, oh gosh, such a powerful career accelerator. It's like done so much for me. I've seen how much it's done for other people. So the profile will be that foundational piece to get started, to make sure you have that strong presence. But to your point, JP, like if you want to take it to that next level, it's going to require posting more, commenting more, and really creating connections. I think that's actually the real value in LinkedIn. Of course, it's a social media platform, so it's nice to see our posts go viral and get engagement and all of that. But what's it all for if you're not meeting anyone, if you're not really, if that's not turning into a client, or, you know, whatever your goals are. So the power in LinkedIn is those connections, is learning from each other and being part of that community. So creating content, again, whether it's a post or a comment is still content, that is going to be a really great way to start getting your expertise out there. And interestingly, it will help grow your confidence and your voice. And this is something that happened to me where, you know, you post enough and you sort of get into a rhythm and you're like, okay, I can speak on this topic. This is how I like to talk about this topic. And that will carry over into your corporate job, which is a very cool thing.
And for you, I mean, when you first started, were you nervous to post the first time? Tell us about that a little bit.
100%. And it's so funny. I love sharing this because I worked at LinkedIn. It was my job to post content and create content. And I still got nervous because of all the reasons that many of us think, like, ooh, do I sound smart? Oh, make sure there's no mistakes. Like, this is my professional identity. I definitely felt nervous. It took a while for me to hit post each time. I'd like read it over, just, you know, spending way too long, just rereading it over and over. And then I took a little break when I joined Prezi. And then when I started posting again while I was at Prezi, still nervous, but started posting more and really got into that flow, like I mentioned. You'll get to a point where you kind of just care a little bit less because you've done it so many times, so many repetitions. And you know, like, if a post has a typo, it's not the end of the world, right? But when you haven't done something very much before, yeah, it is nerve-wracking. But with that consistency, with that posting, and in my book, I talk about the 4 E's to posting on LinkedIn. And I think around, like, give or take 100 plus posts, that's when you're really just, you're in it and you're going to have a lot more confidence, I think, around it.
Yeah, really good advice. Obviously, someone who posts on LinkedIn a lot myself. But I think the key piece is really having something that you're passionate about saying. It's don't post to post. And especially if you're just starting to get active on LinkedIn, don't worry that you may only get 5 likes. It's okay.
Like, you're just starting a journey.
Expect it. Yeah. It takes a while to build up. And then really, truthfully, LinkedIn, maybe 10% of people who follow you or you're connected with will ever see your post. Don't even really be worried about it, because it's just going to take that time. And most importantly, I think you're just trying to build those connections. And that's really what's happening on LinkedIn. We could probably have an entire podcast complaining about what's happening on LinkedIn because it changes all the time. But they've really done a good job now where they really only want people who are really connected to you or interacting with you and you have real relationships to see the post. So less and less goes viral. So the good news for HR leaders is I think you can have a really more frank conversation. You really are hitting an HR audience if you're writing content that resonates with HR leaders. It's not going to be seen by people who aren't thinking about HR the same way.
And I think the great thing is, yeah, a lot of followers is nice, but you want a quality group of people. So if you only have 5 people liking your post, but those 5 people are your ideal audience and the people you want to meet and people you look up to and respect, then that's great. You're doing great.
Exactly. What do you think is the biggest mistake you see people making when they're trying to build their LinkedIn presence?
Ooh, actually, gosh, there's a lot of mistakes. Okay. First one is not engaging enough in people's comments. You're pushing, but you're not really giving back to the community. So remember to comment. I think it also, again, LinkedIn's algorithm is always changing, but I think it does give a positive signal to the algorithm when they see you commenting on other people's posts. Okay, this person is part of the community. They're sort of giving back, creating conversation, right? LinkedIn wants to see more conversations being created. So that's the first one, I would say. And then the other thing, it's not so much a mistake, but it's like a mindset thing where a lot of people, and I'm talking a lot about the book, going to different companies, and I'm getting this question consistently. Oh, I don't have something original to post. Or I'm like, I'm so close to posting, but like, is anyone going to find this interesting? And I tell them, here's the secret. Nothing is original on LinkedIn and there's nothing new under the sun. And it's just about the way you present it, your experiences, your challenges that will make people want to follow you versus someone else talking about the same thing. It's the way that you frame things, the frameworks that you create, to not put so much pressure on yourself that it has to be this groundbreaking idea, to share your challenges, your stories. Like, that's what people want to hear. And that's what's going to help people feel connected to you.
Yeah, that's great advice. And that's what we really can't replicate anyways, is that human piece, the human connection, your stories. And that's why I was kind of saying that's got to be something you're passionate about. But I agree, you're not going to write a post that no one's ever heard of or seen. And if you are creating content like that, then you should write a book and take it that way. But it's just sort of get started if you want to have more of a LinkedIn presence. And I don't know if you know the stats, and this is what I've heard, so I don't know if this is accurate, but it's only around 2% of people actually post on LinkedIn. When you think across all the followers, they actively post. And then you've got people who obviously engage, is maybe another 10%-ish, 15%. And a lot of people are more just watching and liking in the background. So it's a big opportunity if you are trying to grow your brand. You seem to be thoughtful about that as well. Now, Lorraine, you also work a lot with what I call next-gen HR leaders or next-gen leaders who are kind of emerging and really working hard to become a leader or even an executive. And I wonder if you could talk about a few tactical things that leaders can do to really be perceived as more leader-like or have more executive presence.
One of the things that I think is the biggest career accelerator is public speaking. Being willing to speak at an all-hands meeting, speak at a team meeting, speak externally. It is a scary thing to be a public speaker. That's why I think, like, if you can be that person to really push past that fear, to do the thing in spite of the fear, people see you differently. And it's a great way to get visibility. Literally, people are seeing you, right? They see your face, especially virtually. Like, we want to try to get on video and have people see us as much as we can, because out of sight, out of mind, unfortunately, is a real thing. Finding those opportunities to speak up, to lead that meeting, even if it's a short segment, I think that goes a long way. And again, make it known. If you're like, I don't see an opportunity, tell your manager, this is what you want to do more of. Is there an opportunity where I can perhaps lead the second half of that meeting or this one small part of the team meeting? So I think that's one really powerful way to do that. And then I also talk about the RAVE model in my book, which is for building influence. So RAVE stands for relationships, appearances, visibility, and expertise. Leaning on these 4 factors to help grow your influence. That's, you can never have too much influence at an organization. And so you want people to know who you are. And that's built on all these 4 different areas.
Yeah, great advice. Speaking up, and we really associate leaders with public speaking. The evidence says the more you talk in a meeting, the more that people believe that person's a leader, which is unfortunate. So we should also know that as HR leaders, we should watch out for that. I call that the confidence versus competence. But we also just need to take that and use that to our advantage if we're trying to grow our career.
Yeah. And I'll make an additional point because I mentioned earlier I'm an introvert. Gosh, we do not like speaking up, you know, live in the meeting. It's not an easy thing to do. To your point, let's be aware of that bias that we might have. But introverts might not be thinking, oh, gosh, like, or they might be thinking public speaking is like not for me. I'm scared. But introverts, I think, are very well suited. It's one of their superpowers to present because you prep ahead of time, you're thoughtful, you know how to connect to an audience. So all these things that introverts are very good at lend themselves well to public speaking in this controlled environment. So if there's any introverts who are concerned, oh, I can't speak up, you can, and you're very well suited for it.
If you're thoughtful as an introvert, you may speak a little less, but when you speak, people should listen. And so take advantage of that, but command the room when you speak, don't speak the whole time. So I think that's great. Now, one of my last questions for you is, what's one piece of advice that you would give to HR leaders about developing this next generation of HR executives or executives in general in this kind of new world of work? Kind of have Gen Z, Alpha, et cetera. How do you think about that? And what are you seeing?
I think presence is a super key piece to that. A lot of us think presence or hear presence, and we think executive presence, a certain level, how I show up in the boardroom. But presence is really all those small moments that are important that happen throughout a given day that contribute to our overall presence. So it's how you're leading that meeting. It's how you're presenting to the team. It's that clarity in the Slack message you sent. It's the post you're making on LinkedIn. So my hope is that presence becomes a more approachable thing. It's something that we feel empowered, that we all have, and that we all can continue developing. I wish I had been more intentional with mine earlier on in my career, but hopefully his book, as you said, is helping the next generation, the people who are really ambitious and who want to grow in their careers. I'm excited for all of them to start on that journey.
Seems like you've worked out. You've built a pretty good presence, I think, at this point. So, all right, Lorraine, last question for you. And I ask all my guests this question. I know you're not in HR, so we'll still put the challenge there for you. What's one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Adaptability and empathy, two words.
And why adaptability and empathy for you?
Things are changing so fast. HR is often at the leading the forefront of this, right? And trying to adjust and make changes within an organization. And with adaptability and with a lot of change, the empathy needs to come in and an understanding that this can be a really hard thing. It can be overwhelming to understand where people are coming from and where they're at. Those are two important qualities for HR, for any leader in the future.
Awesome. Lorraine, thank you so much for being on the podcast. The book is Unforgettable Presence. And obviously, people need to follow you if they're not already. They probably are at your 300,000 followers. But thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Lorraine for sharing how to have an unforgettable presence and be the CEO of your own career. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and have even more business impact. Go to futureofhr.com and subscribe, and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from over 100 HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies that will advance your career. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest, Christy Pam Bianchi. Christy's the CHRO of Caterpillar, and in our conversation, we're going to dive into her amazing career and why she believes agility and AI is the future of work. This will be a great conversation and one you will not want to miss. Thanks again for listening to The Future of HR and being part of our community.